Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, all of it brought to you by Man Crates. Right now, you can get 5% off your Man Crate by going to mancrates.com/martini. And Jim, just when you think our jaws have already hit the floor too many times with the latest revelations with the FBI and the Russia investigation, we get not just another drop, we get another bucketful, courtesy of Trey Gowdy. He, of course, is a key member of the House Intelligence Committee, the principal author, along with committee investigators, of the memo that was released last week. He sat down with Martha McCallum on The Story on the Fox News Channel, and she simply brought up the point that I think Devin Nunes made at some point in recent days. He's the chairman of the committee, that the investigation is nowhere near over, and that the next point of focus is going to be the State Department. So Martha McCallum pointing to a referral for criminal activity from Senate Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, namely Chuck Grassley and Lindsey Graham. And here's where the conversation went.
We know that there was a criminal referral that was made by Senators Graham and Grassley. In it, it includes this. The foreign source gave information to an unnamed associate of Hillary and Bill Clinton, who then gave information to an unnamed official in the Obama State Department, who then gave the information to Steele. What do you know about that?
Everything that there is to know about it, and I've known about it for over a month.
Well, that's intriguing. A little more, please.
I'm pretty troubled by what I read in the documents with respect to the role the State Department played in the fall of 2016, with including information that was used in a court proceeding. I am troubled by
it. So weeks before the election, somebody in the Obama State Department was feeding information from a foreign source to Christopher Steele.
When you hear who the source or one of the sources of that information is, you're going to think, oh, my gosh, I've heard that name somewhere before. Where could it possibly have been?
And the foreign source?
The domestic source. And I'm trying to think how Secretary Clinton defined him. I think she said he was an old friend who emailed her from time to time.
Sidney Blumenthal?
That'd be really warm. You're warm. Yeah.
Wow, Jim, Sid Blumenthal just rears up in all the ugliest possible places. What do you make of this, and what does it mean for the investigation?
You know, Greg, I assume most of our listeners are familiar with Sidney Blumenthal, but just in case they aren't, I wrote an article about him in the late Obama years. This is a longtime Clinton loyalist, probably the definitive partisan hack, a paranoid conspiracy theorist, the kind of guy who leaves a trail of slime everywhere he goes, basically. For perspective, Sidney Blumenthal was such a ruthless SOB, so dishonest, so underhanded, so the epitome of everything that was worst in politics, that when Hillary Clinton went to the State Department in 2009, in the beginning of the Obama administration, the message was very clear from the Obama team: you can't bring him to the State Department. We could bring in anybody else you want, but he was such an underhanded knife fighter during the Democratic primary that he crossed the line too many times. They simply would not accept him. Now, listeners may recall that Hillary Clinton kept him as an advisor off the books, so to speak, basically getting payments from other Clinton-related organizations. And he had his own weirdo sources in Libya, and he was giving her information off the books and through back channels and via emails and things like that. The bottom line is that Sidney Blumenthal is the absolute last person that the FBI or Department of Justice should be relying on to put together a case recommending for a FISA warrant or any other kind of warrant. Sidney Blumenthal has not earned that trust. Sidney Blumenthal is the kind of person who would spread false rumors. Sidney Blumenthal is vicious liar, proven. Think back to the Starr investigation where he came out and he basically said that, Ken Starr had asked, these ludicrous, outlandish, nosy questions that were completely improper in the legal context. And then finally, the legal transcripts were released. And of course, nothing Sidney Blumenthal had said had occurred in that courtroom. But he knew he could talk to the press and Ken Starr couldn't. He could make any accusation he wanted, and no one would remember this afterwards. accept people like us, Greg. Now, because of this, this is why, like, look, you know, this is not a complete exoneration of Trump and any involvement with Russia he may have had and all that stuff. But look, if this is what got the ball rolling, if this is what got the initial investigation into Carter Page, well, basically, it's not just that, you know, Christopher Steele was working for Hillary Clinton and the DNC. It sounds like some of his sourcing was coming from this. Basically, once you're taking information from Sidney Blumenthal, it's basically one step away from taking information from David Brock. That's the level of credibility we're dealing with here. My suspicion is if this comes true, and there's no reason to think, you know, Trey Gowdy would make something like this up, that basically anybody who's to the right of center of, say, the Brookings Institution is going to look at this and say, okay, this whole thing's a partisan witch hunt, and there's no point in pursuing this any further. That may or may not be fair, but if you are the FBI, if you are the Department of Justice, you cannot rely on a guy like Sidney Blumenthal. You don't want a guy like that within 100 miles of the legal work that you're doing if you want it to stand up in court. And I think that the Trump administration will have a, you know, fairly strong argument that all of this investigation that got rolling before the election was ultimately being driven by a bunch of people who very much wanted to see Hillary win and not see him win. But what's even more is that some of the information was coming from people who were explicitly aiming to take down Trump as a presidential candidate. And that really does, you know, start wondering how much of the evidence that's going to be cited by Mueller ends up being fruit of the poisonous tree.
Let's move on to our bad martini now. And as many folks know, February 8th is when the most recent continuing resolution to fully fund the federal government runs out. The amazing part about the last one is that the Republicans basically won the standoff because they had the bill that would fund the government. The Democrats opposed it. The Democrats got a lot of the blame. And it looked like that's where the momentum was headed again this time. The House Republicans on Tuesday passed a bill that basically kept the government running, but it did add more money for the military. Not to be outdone, however, President Trump having a roundtable at the White House on immigration policy and especially highlighting the dangers posed by MS-13, basically giving the Democrats a huge political gift in terms of talking points by saying if he doesn't get what he wants on immigration, he's all for a shutdown.
If we don't change it, let's have a shutdown. We'll do a shutdown, and it's worth it for our country. I'd love to see a shutdown if we don't get this stuff taken care of.
I'd love to see a shutdown. Jim, we just spent several days last month explaining how those two issues should not be inextricably linked because it's important to keep the government open and the deadline for DACA expiring is not for several more weeks. But the president has basically blown up that entire line of talking points.
Yeah, look, yes, the last shut, you know, very temporary one-day shutdown did not turn out badly for the Republicans, but this was heavily driven in large part by a group of Senate Democrats who didn't want a shutdown. Now, why did these red state Democrats, the Joe Manchins, the Claire McCaskills of the world, why were they nervous about this? Well, because they're incumbents, and generally government shutdowns make the public cranky. They make the public irritated. They don't blame one party or the other that much. They tend to say a significant portion, usually a large plurality, say, a pox on both your houses. You're all a bunch of morons. Why can't you get your act together and keep the government open? And this is bad news for the Claire McCaskills of the world and the Joe Manchins of the world, but it's also bad news for the Republican incumbents. And my suspicion is that, you know, the most Americans don't really want to spend that much time sorting through the blame game and who's, you know, who's offered a bill, who's not offered a bill, who's been reasonable, who's not. They tend to blame everybody. However, right, so earlier today, Greg, Nancy Pelosi said that she did not find the current funding proposal before it passed the House yesterday acceptable. Most Democrats voted against it. She wants a promise from Paul Ryan that they will vote on DACA at some date before she will support any type of funding resolution. So on the one hand, like, okay, here we go again. We're going to have a rerun of what happened a few weeks ago. If, you know, Republicans are going to pass the spending bill, and the Democrats may not. And if the Democrats don't, Republicans can, you know, accurately say, look, we voted to fund the government. We don't have enough votes in the Senate. It's the Democrats who are holding it up. And at the very least, you can mitigate the damage and blame everybody. The only thing that could possibly blow up that is if, say, the president came out and explicitly said, let's have a government shutdown with enthusiasm in his voice, which is exactly what he did yesterday. So, man, he just he's convinced, you know, border security is popular, which it is. He's convinced that if he has this argument, he will win, which is not necessarily a safe bet, because the lesson for the Democrats in the last fight is that, yeah, a lot of Americans like DACA. Americans, you know, these adorable Muppets. They didn't come to the country of their own volition. Look at all the valedictorians. They're great kids. You know, we should let them stay. But then you ask, are you willing to have a government shutdown in order for them to stay? And all of a sudden, the support drops by a lot. People don't like the government shutdowns. They don't like seeing the Smithsonian close when a bunch of kids want to go have a field trip. This is how every government shutdown since the mid-90s has played out. By and large, you should try to avoid government shutdowns politically. Here's the president, who sounds generally enthusiastic. As of our conversation, Greg, it's not clear there's going to be one. I hope they avoid one. Because a lot of people go into government shutdown fights convinced they're going to win. Very few people walk away feeling like they actually won once they're done.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi can oppose all she wants. She's powerless to stop anything. Senate Democrats, obviously, are a different story when you've got the need to get to 60 votes to pass anything. But we'll see. I still think ultimately if Republicans are the ones putting out the bill to keep the government funded and the Democrats oppose it, they've got the high ground. But the president not doing anybody any favors. But if you want to do a big favor for the man in your life, Jim, you know, there's some pretty good options out there.
Look, we all want to take the knife to the budget and cut some things. But now I'm going to have a really cool knife because of my absolutely awesome kit that I got from ManCrates. And this is just one of them that they offer. They offer a wide variety, but I looked at the selections there and said, ooh, that looks really good. This is exactly what our women listeners should be considering for their husbands, for their fiancés, for their boyfriends. Your man will get so excited when he gets this actual wooden crate. It's got this little crowbar thing you type opening it with. This is much better than, you know, a box of chocolates or God forbid, a necktie or something like that. Look, you know, heart-shaped box of delicious beef jerky, now you've got some attention. That's the ultimate snack aphrodisiac, as they say. Look, mancrates.com is the only place you can find these awesome gifts that guys love. This is not some cologne sampler or just a cheesy mug. ManCrates offers curated gift collections for every type of guy, from the sports fanatic to the home chef to the outdoorsman.
So go to ManCrates.com. You can do it right now as we're talking about it. Check out all these different options. There's dozens and dozens of them. Check out classics like the NFL barware crate and the whiskey appreciation crate, or fresh takes on traditional Valentine's gifts like the jerky heart or the salami bouquet. So go to ManCrates.com, pick the perfect gift, and then wait for the magic moment. He will fall head over heels when his gift arrives because it's so different than the traditional stuff. And he gets to pry the wooden crate open, as Jim mentioned, with the included crowbar. What's more fun than that for guys? They have thousands of five-star reviews, and every gift comes with a complete satisfaction guarantee. So what you need to do is go to mancrates.com/martini to get 5% off. They don't offer a discount anywhere else. Get 5% off right now at mancrates.com/martini. mancrates.com/martini. All right, Jim, let's get to our crazy martini now. And this story has gotten a lot of mixed reaction. This is NPR's version of the story. President Trump, apparently inspired by the Bastille Day parade he witnessed last summer during a trip to Paris, has ordered the Pentagon to look into staging something similar, but naturally bigger and better for Washington, D.C., the White House confirmed Tuesday. A U.S. official has confirmed the request to NPR. On Tuesday evening, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders shared in a statement that, quote, President Trump is incredibly supportive of America's great service members who risk their lives every day to keep our country safe. She added, quote, he has asked the Department of Defense to explore a celebration at which all Americans can show their appreciation, unquote. U.S. presidents have long shied away from such displays of military prowess, which typically include tanks, missiles, and in some cases, goose-stepping soldiers, for fear of being compared to Washington's Cold War adversaries, where such displays have traditionally been potent symbols of state power. Those countries include Russia, formerly the Soviet Union, China, and North Korea. Jim, the flapping gums of Never Trumpers have certainly been quick to talk about this. Matthew Dowd, the old Bush campaign media guy, says, quote, on Twitter, a guy with five military draft deferments wanting a military parade to honor himself is a bit like Cruella DeVille wanting an award from the Humane Society for her treatment of Dalmatians. Rick Wilson's out there putting together Trump's tin horn dictator uniform to review the troops and so forth. David French, no fan of the president, your National Review colleague, says, hey, let's have a parade. Think of everything the military's accomplished since 9/11. They deserve one, after all. Jim, you've looked at this in the Morning Jolt today. You see the positive sides of the parade, but there's also a lingering question out there that you'd kind of like to have answered first.
Yeah, look, first things first. No, you know, there's like people who are reacting with horror. This is unprecedented. I'm guessing these people were not alive in 1991. And Greg, you know, people say you and I are old. I don't think we're that old. 1991 isn't ancient history. It's not lost to the sands of time. We had one after the Persian Gulf War, and we had, you know, military parades several times before in American history. In the abstract, I don't mind this idea at all. I do kind of think that the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One might be, this November might be a really appropriate moment, not just because of the importance of that date and kind of the way it shaped the world. Look, you know, World War One was a time of great powers and the use of chemical weapons and gas on the battlefield, which doesn't feel all that alien from the world we see outside our windows right now. So I don't mind the idea in the abstract. I think what is a fairer complaint is this. I feel like we have bigger fish to fry right now. And look, I don't want to presume to speak for the U.S. military and our men and women in the armed services, but I'm sure they'd like applause and cheering in a military parade. I just figure they'd also like, you know, a raise and better benefits and to get the defense budget funded. That's something that actually is currently being, you know, discussed about whether we go with the continuing resolution for another couple of weeks or whether we actually get the appropriations process done. Secretary of Defense James Mattis is not shy about this point. He's not shy about any point, really. But he is the kind of guy who has said very explicitly that, look, when your budget is being set, you know, okay, every couple of weeks, you can't make your long-term funding planning and kind of, you know, set your budget for the coming month. And what's more is the Pentagon has been requesting some fairly big-ticket items, upgrades in terms of autonomous systems, which is a fancy word for drones, artificial intelligence. No, we're not talking about Skynet yet, I guess. The upgrades they want to do to cyber, to space. Look, it is a dangerous world out there, and they want to. They're going to need to make significant expenditures to keep pace with those changes in the world. That seems like it should be really important. I don't know if I hear about this. You know, Trump obviously generally supports this. He talks about it, but people have said, certainly from that Washington Post article, he has spoken about this publicly a couple of times, and it seems like the president really, really likes this idea. Well, okay, I don't mind the parade, but can we take care of the bigger issues here? Then something that would be, you know, a nice morale issue, something very useful and symbolic, I suppose. But look, the U.S. military has bigger problems that need to be solved. And I kind of feel like this is a bit of a window dressing issue. It's kind of a side issue compared to all that stuff that I just mentioned. So we will see how it shakes out. I do think some people will be foolish enough to say, I hate the idea. This is fascism. And no, it's not fascism or anything like that. Is it possible that Trump will act in a bit of a, you know, narcissistic or self-aggrandizing way during or in the run-up to this parade? I suppose, but this is all kind of baked in the cake of Trump. What I would much rather focus upon is I hope both the administration and everybody who's going to, all of the column inches that are going to be spent on debating the parade and all of the minutes of cable airtime that are going to be spent on this, if we could talk about what our U.S. military actually needed at this time, I think we'd all be better off as a country.
Fun times. Talk to you tomorrow.
I'll see you tomorrow. Actually, you won't see me tomorrow, Greg.
Oh, that's right. You're off the rest of the week.
Monday. Yeah.
Yes, Jim's off to the Rockies, beautiful area of the country, on Thursday and Friday. But fear not, the Three Martini Lunch will be here. David French will be in tomorrow and Alexander DeSantis on Friday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget our friends at ManCrates. That's mancrates.com/martini to get 5% off. And do tune in again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.